On this 4th of July, we're asking people, what's your American dream? That answer varies, of course, depending on who you are, where you live, where you come from, and a whole host of other factors. Anke Voss came to the United States with her family from Germany.
Even though everyone can pursue their dreams, and people do start out in different places. And I think it's harder for some than others. So I think it's important to recognize that, because everyone has different stories.
We'll hear many of those stories over the next hour as part of our Redream project. I'm Nyla Boodoo. It's a special edition of the 21st from the Multicultural Community Center in Rantoul. That's all coming up this hour. Stay with us. Welcome to the 21st and happy 4th of July. I'm Nyla Boodoo. A few weeks ago, we went to Rantoul in central Illinois. We talked with a group at the Multicultural Community Center about what the American dream looks like today. It was part of our ongoing partnership with the Redream Project. And since it's the 4th of July, it seemed like the perfect moment to focus on those dreams in this special broadcast. Thank you to everyone for being here and joining us for our event. I'm Nyla Boodoo. I host the new talk show, The 21st, and we've been partnering with Rantoul with the Multicultural Community Center. And I want to thank Martha Gonzalez, its executive director, for all of the work she did for today's event. But the project that we have been partnering with is called Redream. And it's really about sharing everyone's stories of their American dream. And I think everyone here has something in common, whether they realize it or not, which is that we all have a story of how our families came here, whether it's our story, how we came here, or our parents, or our great-grandparents. And so we've been asking you to share those stories, and there's lots of ways to do that. You can just do that. We have an Instagram photo. We have a form. You can go online. And if you really want to share your story and have us record it, we have a room set up in the back for you to do that as well. So, and throughout this event today, we're also going to ask that if you want to share your story, please feel free to do so. Without further ado, let me introduce the folks who are up here. You've already met Martha Gonzalez. And joining us as well is Anke Voss, who's the Director of Archives and Special Collections at the Champaign County Historical Archives at the Urbana Free Library. You know, one thing I was going to share, and I think yesterday on the show we had the founder of StoryCorps. His name is Dave Isay, and StoryCorps is a public radio project where people just go into a booth and share stories, and they go into a booth with a friend or a loved one or a family member, and they just talk about things. And I think that simple act of sharing a story, of someone talking about their story and other people listening, can be a really powerful experience, which I'm hoping we can do today as well. So we're all going to share our family stories of how we came to this country, and I thought I would start really briefly with mine. I was born in Miami, Florida, and my parents came here from the Caribbean, from Trinidad, in the early 70s, because my dad is a university professor and accepted a position to teach at a school that was starting in Miami called Florida International University. So he and my mom came here. My oldest sister was born in Trinidad, and my middle sister and I were born here in the States. And when I think about our story and the migration of that, I think further back to my great-grandparents who left India and went to Trinidad, and then my parents who made that move from Trinidad here, and I think we all have lots of those stories. Anke, I wonder if you could share the story of where you grew up and how you ended up here?
Yes. I came to the United States when I was in high school, and I arrived here a few months prior to my 14th birthday. And I arrived here not because I came to the United States, not because I planned to or had any say, but my stepfather had a project that he was working on for his job in on the East Coast in Boston. And so we came to the United States. But I think when talking about the American dream at first,
You came from Germany.
Yes, I came from Germany. I'm sorry. I came from Germany. I grew up in southern Germany near the Swiss border. And when we arrived here, it was supposed to be short term, just in about a year. So, you know, I never thought when I first came here that I needed to think about long term, you know, what is this move going to mean? I was like, well, I'm going over here for a fun year. It wasn't really until another 7 years later that when my stepfather and my mother went back to Germany that I actually had to decide what path I was going to take.
And how old were you at that point?
I had just started graduate school, so in my early 20s.
And did you think at that point in your 20s, were you thinking I'm going to finish graduate school and go back to Germany?
You know, I think at that point, and again, we all have these crossroads in our life. At that point, most of my education had been in the United States, and especially the type of degrees I was receiving in history, that I knew that without the German educational training, it would be very hard for me to transition back into living in Germany, although I could. But at that point, it was really hard, having spent kind of those years in your youth here, mostly. You know, I really started, you know, my peers was who was around me, and I was sharing in their dreams, you know, of what they were doing in the future. And so the conversation I was having about my life and my future, it seemed like it was going to be in the United States, because I couldn't really, wasn't talking to anybody about what other life maybe I would be having. So,
and Martha, I wonder what crossroads, where were you at when you decided I want to come to the United States? How old were you?
Well, I was probably 5 years old.
So pretty early.
Yeah, very early. My dad, I remember, I wanted always to learn English. It was fascinated to me, listen, people who speak English. It was very fascinated, and my dad hired a private tutor to teach me a little bit more.
And this was in Colombia?
In Colombia, when I was 5 years old. And then I didn't learn that much. But, I grew up, I got my degree and my college, and I went to work for the central bank. And they wanted me to learn. Well, I needed the language, English, because of my work. So I came to learn English. I was a need at the time for that job. When I was here during that time, the central bank was going through a very difficult recession. The country was going bad, and they were laying off a lot of people. And they called me, Martha, we have to lay you off. I'm sorry, I'm here, I'm not gonna.
How old were you?
This was in 90, don't ask me math, I don't know much.
You don't want to say the year, just how old you were at the time.
Well, it was 22 years ago. Then, when I went back to my regular job, everybody who was in my office left. It was, they reduced, my department was gone, and then, of course, I had another type of job there, but I said, no. When I was here, I really fell in love with this country. Honestly, every place where I went, the library, the church, the students, everywhere I went, I thought that I was blessed. I thought it was in another world. The peace, Champaign-Urbana, it was peaceful to me. When I went back, so I quit the job finally, and then I decided I have to go back to continue studying. And I came back, the same place, to Champaign-Urbana. And I continue my studies, and then I get married. Oh no, it's only 1 year, and then I go back to Colombia. I went back every year to visit, but not to live. And I love my country, United States, and I love my country, Colombia.
Thanks for sharing that. Anca, I think when we were thinking about Rantoul, I wanted to ask you about where we are. And so much of the history, as we were driving in, we were passing the Air Force, the Air Base, and wanted to ask you what stories of Rantoul you can share with us about the history of this community. And I wonder particularly about the base and how much that shaped the community.
Sure. Rantoul, similar to Champaign-Urbana, starting in the mid-1800s, was an agricultural community. That also, and its economy was driven by agriculture, and then was really increased its production and its commerce through the fact that the railroad came through Rantoul and Champaign-Urbana. That was the first big change.
What was the railroad came through? Was that, were they shipping? Was it from Chicago? Okay, and
south.
Was it freight or people or everything?
Both. It was both, but it meant that the local communities and agricultural output grew, you know, exponentially, both in Rantoul in this region and in Champaign-Urbana.
And what time this would have been?
The 1850s.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's probably one of the big pieces that also probably determined other industries coming to this area, and including the University of Illinois. I'm sure if the railroad had not been in this area, that the university wouldn't have been placed there. And of course, both for Rantoul and Champaign-Urbana and the entire county, you know, they are still today an important employer. The next largest employer in the county was Chanute Airfield, which was started in 1917 to train pilots for World War I. That was really its start. But it grew to support the Air Force and its servicemen, officers, and enlisted men through all the various military campaigns that the United States was involved in. World War II, Vietnam, Korea, and so on.
Well, there's so many great stories of the people who came through there, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I wonder for you what stands out. I know people maybe have recently learned of the connection the Tuskegee Airmen had here.
Sure.
There are lots of different groups, probably lots of other immigrant groups that came here because of the field, the airfield.
Well, Chanute, as I talk with people in the community and the history of Chanute, it touched so many people because it was such a large employer. It trained so many people. Over the life of Chanute Airfield and Air Base, over 2 million people were trained here. And so then you think about all the staff, that support staff that was employed at Chanute, but then also in the community. So the location of Chanute and the massive training effort it provided meant major infrastructure changes in Rantoul. So lots of federal dollars came to Rantoul and built and improved the infrastructure because they had to support all these men and women being trained here. And so it was, a huge influx of again, not just people, but resources and commerce.
And who stayed? Because it sounds like a lot of it was of so very transient community, mm-hmm, but who mm-hmm, stayed?
Mm-hmm. I think, a lot of people came to this area so they could work for Chanute. And so there were lots of opportunities. Again, not just necessarily on the base, but when you think about the base, the people who worked there had to live somewhere, and they drove the community. They had to shop, they had to clothe, they had to put their children in schools. Chanute had, the base had its own hospital. All that drove the economy. And again, during the height of World War II, which was when it was the largest, Chanute had about 32,000 men and women being trained at one time at the base. So it's a small city, and it was, because it had everything. It had theaters, it had a hospital, it had schools, family housing, sports facilities, a library, and again, people had to staff that. So it brought a lot of people in, and as you mentioned, so there are lots of really important stories. One story that I think has significance very clearly beyond Rantoul is the Tuskegee Airmen that most remember as training in Tuskegee, Alabama, that actually their initial training took place here at Chanute. They were here for less than a year. But those airmen, those aviators were trained here, but more significantly, a large group of African-American men were also brought to Chanute as enlisted men to provide and to support those aviators. So it was a very significant moment of for introducing an African-American community to Rantoul and integrating them and their families in the community. Really, really important.
We'll have more from Rantoul on the meaning of the American dream in just a few minutes. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and you're listening to a special edition of The 21st. Having a great 4th of July. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and you're listening to a special edition of The 21st. We're talking today about the American dream and what it means to you, your family, and your ancestors. This program was recorded at the Multicultural Community Center in Rantoul, a community that's seen a lot of changes over the years, including the closure of a large military facility.
Well, when you think about those demographic shifts, I wonder how you see the community changing since Chinook closed its early 90s.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first of all is that when Chinook closed, it was devastating to Rantoul.
Everybody.
It was devastating. And within a decade of the base closing in 93, Rantoul had lost half of its population. And of course, commerce and commercial activity dried up in so many sectors, which of course also meant that jobs went away, and resources went away. All those federal dollars that and state dollars that helped support Chinook and its operation, that all went away. And then in terms of its change that since then, of course, again it lost half its population. I think its rebirth is taking place by the fact that new communities are emerging out of this change and this change of the community. So as a result of the fact that the community lost so many resources and was really, devastated by this loss of employer, it meant that housing prices plummeted. But that meant opportunities for new communities to see and Rantoul as an opportunity for them. Mm-hmm. New communities and new families have moved to Chinook, and they are the new they will emerge as the new success of Chinook and the new spirit of, not of Chinook, of Rantoul.
Of Rantoul. And right. I think, well, when you say that, Anka, I know that, Martha, when you look at census data, I think we have the number of, in the past decade, when you look at the number of Hispanic households here, mm-hmm. It's actually, I think it's increased 262%.
Yeah.
The number of Hispanic households in Rantoul. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could share for people who have never been to the Multicultural Community Center here, how you all came about. And certainly you all are here to serve every member of the community, but I wonder if you could share a little bit about the Latino community here.
Yeah. I started the organization following the agricultural work, migrant workers. So Migrant and Seasonal Head Start program was based on Hoopston. At that time, I think that they had a big agricultural company that they shut down. I don't remember the name of it. Did somebody remember? I don't remember the name of it. So there were no more jobs and opportunities for agricultural workers there. So they moved. The agricultural workers moved to Rantoul. And the Migrant and Seasonal Head Start program that was in Hoopston, they shut down as well. So I created this because it was a huge need. The children didn't have a place to go. And we wanted to have a safe place for the children during the day while the parents were working on the fields. So that's why we created. And then these families are hired by big companies, agricultural big companies. These companies saw good opportunity, housing opportunity on all these empty buildings in Rantoul. So they adapted those buildings for temporary housing for the migrant families. Like the old hospital has been renovated to have a temporary housing there for the migrants. And then they come from Texas, Mexico, Florida, everywhere. So we serve them, the children, and they live there. Some of the families live there. Some of them live in Champaign. Some of them live in houses around Rantoul. So as everybody know, whoever has children, we know our children like to be have stability, and we don't want our children to face a lot of transitions. The migrant families transition from Texas to here to work during the current season, and then from here to Michigan for strawberry, from Washington to asparagus, and then the children travel along with them. And it's very difficult, very, very difficult. So when they found here in Rantoul a support where we can guide them, help them, and they found the opportunity and the factories here in Rantoul, they provide the jobs. So they decide to stay and have a more stable life for the children and the families. So that's why the majority of this population has been growing here, because I see through the years that more and more and more people is coming and to stay.
I want to ask in a minute, for those of you who are ready to share their stories, Scott's got the mic, so if you want to share your story, if you want to put your hand up, and Scott can go over to you if anyone wants to share. Okay, so before we get to your story, I wanted to ask you guys, everyone can have the American dream.
Yes.
Do you think that's true?
Yes, it is absolutely true. To my experience, everybody, it has to be the desire on you to achieve your dreams. In United States, it's easy to get your dream. It is easy by my experience. I've seen it. You find all the resources you have. You have a lot of support. You have, even if you don't have support the way you want it, you can achieve it, you can get it. And it is true.
Anka, what do you think?
Yes, I think that, the United States is a place where people can pursue their dreams. And those are all different dreams. I think that's to recognize that, but also to recognize that even though everyone can pursue their dreams and that people do start out in different places. And I think it's harder for some than others. So I think it's important to recognize that. Because everyone has different stories, and they come from a different place. But I think that everybody should be encouraged, and I think we as communities, I think, also have responsibilities to help each other to pursue those dreams. Because again, some of us have some privileges maybe that others don't that make it easier for us to pursue those dreams. So again, to recognize, yes, everyone can pursue their dreams, and the United States, I think, is a place where there are just lots of opportunities. And even though there are barriers, to get from one step to the other, that we have to work for to overcome. But again, I think to recognize and to celebrate that we all have dreams and can achieve them, but that we also need to look out for each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
So if you want to comment or have questions, or if you want to share your family story, if you can just start by saying your name, that would be great.
Well, that's complicated. I go by Bobby here, Bobby Trist, but my mother named me Barbara Sylvia. But nobody here says Barbara correctly, unless they're Hispanic or European. They say Barbara, which is, oh. So here I go by Bobby. In Europe, I'm Barbara. Okay, Germany and Switzerland. My mother was Swiss. So my parents were both immigrants. I was born in the Detroit area. And my mother came in 1925 at the age of 26 to earn her trousseau with the plan of staying 3 years, and it took her 28 years to get home. Mm-hmm. My father came in 1919, right after he was discharged from the Canadian Army. He'd been in World War I. I think he was probably running away from war in that sense, because his closest sister died of the flu epidemic, and I think she died before he got home. She died in 18, and you know, the war wasn't over till the end of 18. So my dream is for everyone to have the same opportunities my parents had. There's so much vitriolic against immigrants these days, and especially immigrants who are brown or black, who are from poor countries. And I know that I have white privilege, and I don't really want to give it up, but I want everyone else to have it. So it's my dream that everybody be treated that way, and also that everyone have the same opportunities and be able to do what my parents did. They were able to buy a house and build a life. And when my father died, we were able to have Social Security. So that enabled my mother to keep the family together. And those benefits should be there for everybody, no matter their race or religion or country of origin.
Thanks for sharing that story.
I have a couple of people that I would like to invite to Children's Dreams. Deanna is, she's one of our teachers, and I know she has a beautiful dream.
My name is Diana. My parents brought me here from Mexico. I was only 8 years old. They would travel from Colorado to Texas to work, and it was really difficult for us because we always had to meet new friends. In 95, my father decided that we would come to Illinois because in Colorado there was no work. So we came to Illinois, and then they worked their harvest, and my father decided that he would stay here. And we've been here since 95. It was hard at first because we were not used to the cold weather, the snow, or English was not very well either. We spoke mostly Spanish, so that was a whole different level. Back in 95, there was not a lot of Hispanics around here. I'm very grateful that my father decided to stay because it was a small community, and we were able to make friends, and we were able to establish in the community, play sports, and become what my father wanted us to, graduate school. Now we all have our jobs, our houses, our own children, and we just hope for the best for our children to be better than us and be able to go to college and be able to have a good education, something that if my father hadn't decided to bring us, we wouldn't have been able to accomplish that. And it's very, like I say, it was very hard at first because the language barrier, so it was, everything was so different for us. And now my dream is for my children to have a better future, and I know that being here, they have that opportunity, and they have that, they can look up to us and say, hey, my grandpa came from Mexico, and look at my mom, look at my uncles, you know, they have their own houses, they went to school, they graduated.
Thanks for sharing that. Thank you.
Yeah. María Mendoza, ¿podrías decir cuál es tu sueño americano? ¿Nos lo cuentas? ¿Lo puedes decir en español? María, is in the corner. Tranquila, lo que quieras, no te preocupes.
Mi nombre es María Mendoza, Y este, yo vengo de Texas y me quedé hace mucho tiempo. Tengo como 9 años que me quedé aquí y trabajé en el...
My name is Maria Mendoza and I came from Texas. I've been here for 9 years and I decided to stay here.
Yo he trabajado también en la agricultura, la espiga, y quiero un mejor para mis hijos. Este, yo sé que ellos lo van a tener.
I also, my job is I work in agricultural work, and I was working at wheat, and my dream is to provide my children a better future.
Y yo sé que lo van a tener aquí, este, ellos son unos buenos estudiantes y que vayan al colegio. Yo no fui al colegio, pero sigo adelante y luchando por ellos y ellos lo van a lograr.
And I know that they are going to make it happen. They are good kids, they are good students, and I'm going to go continue fighting for them because I know that they are going to make it happen.
Gracias. Thank you.
As you heard, just some of the many versions of the American Dream. This is all part of our ongoing collaboration with the ReDream Project. We'll hear more from the people at the Multicultural Community Center in Rantoul when we come back. Stay with us. You're listening to a special 4th of July edition of The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and for the 4th of July, we're talking about what the American dream looks like, depending on who you are and where you or your family come from. It's a 21st show special that we recorded in Rantoul at its Multicultural Center.
So before we wrap up, I just wanted to see if anyone else has dreams that they, or stories or comments that they want to make. And I wanted to ask both of you about you, how you assimilated into the U.S. when you came here, and how much it was important for you. It was interesting to me how she didn't really feel like she, it was very clear what her identity was, and she didn't feel like she needed to change that, and that was a very clear choice she made. And I wanted to ask you about how hard it was, if it was hard for you all when you first came here.
Well, one thing that she says is she needs to establish her credibility.
Yeah.
And I faced that. I've been facing that through this organization. It's very difficult. It has been very difficult. And it's been a lot of hard work. But I never stopped. That's why American Dream is alive. You just have to have your desire to do it. When I came to this building, it was a lot of obstacles. There were people didn't want this program here in this building, and it was very challenged. So I got that through that, and I made my dream. And then since then, I have to face and build credibility in the community. And I didn't change my dress, but I showed the community that how important this program was going to be for the community. And then I gain it. I think at this point, people understand that is make more benefit to the community than harm. So they know now, and that's what impacted me from her.
I mean, I think for me, and as one of the other speakers said, that you know, coming from Germany and having those roots, I think I probably started out in a more privileged position of people assuming, you know, that I would maybe gain certain dreams because I also of the background I have, the education I was fortunate to have, and so I think I again, probably an expectation that I would achieve certain mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, again, the barriers I had in the beginning were that I didn't speak English when I came to the United States. I didn't speak English. And I went to a school, you know, obviously that was an American school, and there was a German teacher there, but she wasn't very nice. I tried not to spend too much time with her, and didn't seek her out. So it was good for me because it then forced me to say, okay, well, I don't want to speak to her, and that's my only option, so I better learn English quick. And I was social, and I wanted to have friends. And I wanted to be part of my new community, so I wanted to be not different. I wanted to be part of it. For me, I think because of my mom, my family does live in Germany. My father still lives in Germany. Still have a large extended family in Germany. I think for me, even though. Clearly, you know, I'm going to stay in America. I have a child who considers himself an American, but also knows that he's German. He's a dual citizen. But they are still a part of me. I'm very much grateful and happy for everything that I've been able to achieve in America. But I am still very proud of my German roots and want that to be part of who I am and trying to balance how you, you know, I present myself. I don't want to say, well, I live in America, but I'm German. I don't want that. I don't want people to feel like I'm trying to set myself apart, that I'm being disrespectful. Or to show that how grateful I am here, but they're still a part of me. Feels that I want to be recognized as having those roots as well, and that I bring something else. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I just want to say one more comment that I really identify with her when she says people didn't take me serious. I've been through that. And I know how hard that was. But with her hard work and showing her community that she was doing a lot of benefit, that's the same happened here through our center, showing the community all this work. Now, still a lot of people don't take me serious, but at least a lot of people now, they know that we said we want this for the center, and then an activities and program like this today, so they take us seriously more now. Mm-hmm.
Can I just say one thing? My name is Leatrice Pace, and I live here in Rantoul, and I'm a community member, and I'm a diehard advocate for families and children and doing things right and justly. Somehow we have to get in with the good old boys that's run by Rantoul. There's a system, and it's called the good old boys system. If you don't know what that is, I'll tell you about it later. because you will always face them when you try to do something new in Rantoul, when you have an idea that could benefit more people than just a handful of people. There are people on a purpose will try to stop you. And when you have to get past that, you have to just keep persevering, never give up, and keep seeking out those people who have the same heart as you have. Because when you build your numbers based on heart desire, you'll eventually overtake that one thing that's blocking your path. And so I've experienced a lot of that by being in Rantoul and trying to do certain things for our children. I believe that they all need mentors. I believe that they need to put aides back in every classroom in the schools because our children need that one-on-one. I believe that the teachers need to be able to teach, and the aides need to be able to be the nurturers and the support in the classroom for every single child. So when you say that, they come at you. I'm not going to say who they is, but it's, no, you're not. That's not going to happen. But that's all that really needs to happen. That's all that really needs to happen. At least give it a try.
What's all that really needs to happen?
We need people in places just being there for children, for families. We need a human being. We don't need another program. We don't need another curriculum. We don't need another, none of that.
Collaboration.
Yeah. Just a few extra people spending a few more hours in a workplace, in a community, in a school. That's what we really truly need. I will continue to fight for that as long as I have breath. And I know I'm going to continually be met with opposition when I try to do that. But it's something that I strongly believe will better our community, will be make us more unified if we fight together. Those walls, those barriers have to come down in order for diverse people to be able to implement their dreams. They have to come down. I know not everything can get passed or whatever, you know, because I don't believe in allowing everything to happen, you know. But there are certain things that need to take place, especially in a community this size. We can make it happen. The Multicultural Center is wonderful. The Youth Center next door, wonderful. Let's build those places up where our children and our families rely on us to take our children for safety, for support, for learning. We have to be more in tune with that than about all this other stuff. You know, it's good to have a beautiful community. I believe in that. But it's not more important than a human life or a human life experience or human learning.
Children.
Those things are more important at all costs. So thank you.
Thank you.
I have my American dream.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say, go ahead. You can share that. And then, do you
have- I think we need to work in collaboration, all of us. We need to leave those barriers on the side and all those political things on the side and work together. Rantoul started it already with Rantoul Tomorrow Project, which has been very, very good. I hear before the school districts and the high school and the village, they were not even talking, coordinating work before. Now they achieved that. Now there is one entity, one organization collaborate with the other, with the school district, high school, it's a different superintendent, and the Rantoul Chamber of Commerce and the village, they're all collaborating to one main goal, to bear Rantoul better. It's a long, long process, but at least they were started that way. And then if those meetings continue and everybody continue participating and then achieving one goal at a time, so I think we can make it. And be everybody involved. Everybody, when I say everybody, is all these organizations, the communities, and trying to express our point and see what are the main needs of the community. And I agree what you said, children goes first. And that's where we need to start. And I'm gonna answer, I'm gonna share my dream, my American dream, really. What I really would like to see for the United States is to have a universal early childhood program where nobody has to pay a penny, rich, poor, for early childhood education. I have to reject sometimes parents because they don't have the economic the way to pay, or the government, they are not, the government the subsidy, they are not eligible for the subsidy for childcare, so they cannot have a child. So what happened there? All of these children ended up with the parents who have difficulties at home, whatever the difficulties are, whatever they don't have, may have stress at home, some of them have drug problems at home, some of them have to work, some of them at this. So what happened? This one mom or one grandma, an elder child, 12, 13-year-old, with all the civilians and the neighbor civilians, who ended up in a small room with a lot of children, which is not safe. So that, my really dream is, I would love for one day that nobody has to pay a penny for early childhood education.
Thanks for spending some of your 4th of July with us. Today's show was part of our partnership with the ReDream Project that's focused on sharing everyone's experience with the American dream and what it looks like today. The program was recorded at the Multicultural Community Center in Rantoul in Central Illinois. For more on ReDream, you can visit ReDreamProject.org. They have videos of some other people's dreams and spaces for you to share your own. We also have a link at our website, www.21stshow.org. That does it for us today. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to be checking in with social service agencies and school superintendents to get their reaction on the partial budget that was passed last week. Also, it's the last full day of Ramadan. We're visiting one Urbana mosque to hear how they break their fast every evening. And we're going to be speaking to a Muslim nutritionist about the physical and spiritual side of fasting. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. If you got that, search for The 21st. We're also available, of course, on iTunes and Android. All of those links are on our website, 21stshow.org. We love your feedback. If you want to send us, leave us a voicemail, email us, or find links to how to find us on social media, that's also at 21stshow.org. We're produced by Christine Herman, Travis Stansel, and with production assistance from Howla Delahi and Ben Thomas Payne. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft and Steve Morg. Scott Cameron is our news director. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a happy and safe 4th of July.